By the way, is this the show?
Oh, no, I wait until an awkward moment happens and I hit this button right here. Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode 104 for the 30th of November, 2016. Man, I am just screwing everything up today. This is amazing. Awesome. Love it. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else happens. And I'm Amos, that's Kent, and we have Podfeet with us tonight, Miss Allison Sheridan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. This can be fun. I have very little idea of what to expect from this. I tried to watch a bunch of shows to get an idea, and I still don't know. Does that mean I understand?
You understand completely.
You're in. You're in. You're there.
All right.
That is awesome.
So, go ahead, Kent.
I was just going to say that it's awesome. We are off to a wonderful start, trying to troubleshoot some tech issues and screwing up the intro. That's kind of standard these days. But yeah, we do have an awesome guest. Welcome, Allison. We are so happy to have you here tonight.
Thanks for having me. What fun.
I'm just doing the whole thing records this time.
Yeah, no doubt. Man, it is getting cold here. It is like 35 degrees, almost legitimately freezing here in New Mexico. It is insane.
35 degrees in New Mexico. That's not normal.
No, it's not. And I mean, it really makes me want to start a fire, which is kind of coincidental because this past weekend, that's kind of what I did all weekend was make fires in the backyard, and it was absolutely awesome. But then again, it was only like 50 degrees then. So it was a lot more comfortable. Now, man, I would have to probably set the house on fire to warm up now.
Just for reference, today's high was 7 degrees.
And that's Fahrenheit.
I heard a weather report this week that warned that it was going to be pretty cold this week. It wasn't going to get above 72. So that was good.
Oh, geez. And you are in what, Southern California?
Southern California. Yeah. I was in San Diego last week, and the weather woman actually said temperatures are going to plummet, and the temperature on screen was 70 degrees.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds awesome.
It was -3 degrees on my drive into work this morning.
Jeez.
Where are you guys?
I'm in Anchorage.
Ah, so you paid for that privilege then.
You know, and the funny thing is, like, he's there because the military sent him there, but he's been trying for 2 decades to get there.
To get there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you really did do it on purpose.
I certainly did. I've been trying to get here since I was 6 because I wanted to see the Aurora Borealis with my own eyes. And now that I've seen it, it was totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Nice.
Yeah, see, I think I could do like a 2-week vacation up there just to see the Northern Lights, and then that'd be enough for me.
Oh, no. There's something about having fairy dust falling on your vehicle as you're driving into work in the morning. Not quite snow. It's just like frozen.
It's just frozen air.
Man. It's completely nuts. It's great.
So we just had a holiday, Thanksgiving. Was yours any good, Amos?
Most relaxing Thanksgiving ever. Ever. It was great.
Yeah. Lots of good food. Good napping?
No. Just watching watching a little bit of football, eating some pizza, having pie.
Pizza?
Yeah.
Pizza for Thanksgiving.
Classic Thanksgiving meal then?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And in true Ritual Misery fashion, this is, I'm getting drop frames warnings. So this show is just going to be amazing this week.
So it's really going off the rails.
Yeah, exactly. So we basically sat down and played Munchkin, the Marvel version, taught the kids how to play that. So it was great. And my wife still doesn't understand the game, which is great because it gives me and the kids something to share. Oh, Allison, have you ever played Munchkin?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Oh, I meant to have it here. it's basically a game where it's a card game where the whole point is to reach level 10 and then you win. And you can help people, you can hurt people, you can aid the enemy, which is always the game. And it's like a kick down the door, stab your enemy, save your friend, and it's the same person. And it's just great. It's so diabolical.
The cool thing about it is it's a card game. It's very much a card game, but it is doing its best to approximate the experience of playing a tabletop role-playing game.
Oh,
so you have your character, and you can add armor and you know weapons and things like that. So the gameplay, it feels like you're playing an RPG, but it's very much a draw cards and act on them kind of game. It's actually really cool, and they have probably 1,000 different varieties at this point. There's a zombies version, of course. What doesn't have a zombies version? Amos was playing the Marvel Comics edition of it. No kidding, hundreds of varieties of it. It's actually really fun.
Interesting. I'm looking at it. $14.
Yeah. Are you a tabletop game player at all?
Not really.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you'll ask me about music, right?
I'm not going to make that mistake.
No, my kids are actually grown and but they're getting me into doing some more some card games. But they have to play stuff that's real simple for me and Steve, because if it gets too complicated, we get lost. It's kind of sad. Like, they tried Settlers of Catan on us once. I was like, no, we're not up to that challenge.
I have yet to play that one. Haven't made it that far in my geekhood. So
I've never really seen the appeal of that game. I've played Catan, and I've actually played a couple different versions of Catan, and it's okay, but I don't know the mass geek appeal of the game. It to me, it just feels very simplified and repetitive. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
So Allison, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. We had about 15 people. Steve cooks a ridiculous amount of food, no matter how many people come. So I try to invite as many as I can, because I remember one year we had, it was 9 people, and he made a 23-pound turkey and a 10-pound ham. It's before any of the side dishes. And there's always 3 pies. No matter how many people come, there have to be 3 pies, because you got to have your pumpkin, your apple, and your pecan. Right. So he cooks a ridiculous amount of food. I'm sort of the assistant in the whole thing. I make a mean cranberry chutney, though.
Oh.
So that's how delicious. Do you deal with all that food? Or is that why you work out so much? Because I'm a big fan of the working out.
Oh, absolutely. I work out twice a day now. I retired, and now I work out twice a day so I can eat and drink anything I want. It's awesome.
That sounds like a plan to me.
It works.
That's awesome.
I actually had my PT test today, so I was waist only because of my back problems, which is good. But it's the last time I have to do a PT test before my 40th birthday. So from now on, they should basically be easy.
Right. What's a PT test?
It's a physical fitness test, I guess. I don't even know. Okay.
Yeah, they keep changing the acronyms. It's basically your physical fitness. Yeah, you nailed it, Amos.
Push-ups, sit-ups, and some run with the waist measurement. And, as you get older, they get easier.
Well, once
you mean they're easier on you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not as harsh with their judgment of you, is pretty much.
Oh, okay. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, they lower the standards basically once a decade. So when you're 20, when you're 30, when you're 40, when you're 50, they lower
the standards. So you're right, hitting the sweet spot now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm finally hitting that 40-year-old tier in April. And man, that's going to be glorious.
Yeah,
that reminds me of a joke I saw recently where somebody asked how old this guy was. He said, I'm 80. He said, you don't look 80. And he said, well, you haven't heard me stand up.
Wow. That's pretty much me anymore. I'll get up out of bed and it's just like snap, crackle, pop. And that's before I get my Rice Krispies.
Maybe I should tell that joke at 40 or 50. That'd probably be funnier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt.
It sounds about right, though. The kids are always wondering what's going on with what's going on with my knees as I'm going up the stairs, because it literally feels like porn sometimes. It's awful.
Allison, what's the geekiest thing you did this week?
Well, I had one idea to tell you about then, but then I started messing around with something else. I've got a Netgear Nighthawk X8. It's a the R8500. It's a wicked book router. It's really cool. It's like this big. It's like the size of your desk, and it's got four antennas, four active antennas. Actually, it's got four internal antennas, four external antennas, and they're active. So they've got the receiver up on the tip of the antennas. It's a tri-band router. It's really, really cool. Fantastic coverage in my house. But I found out that it has built-in VPN. And I thought, well, that sounds fun. You know, this is a consumer grade router. It's probably a switch I check, right? No, turning it on was easy, but it required downloading a bunch of profiles that I had to get onto my Mac or my iPhone. I'd start on the iPhone path and pretty much abandoned that whole path after a while because it got weird. And then tried to get it running on my Mac, and I had installed TunnelBlick to try to get that going. I'm not quite sure. It might be fighting. I've also got Cloak installed on this Mac. It might be fighting with that, but I couldn't get the profile to load on the iPhone either. It would accept one of the files, but not the other three. The main idea is to be able to get into my home network from the outside, because I want to set up backups for my daughter inside on my Drobo for her to do from out of town. But I haven't got that working yet. So if anybody knows how to do this, that'd be fun.
I'm sure Diamond Club is full of people geeky enough to figure that one out.
Yeah, was that geeky enough?
That's super geeky. I understood about half of what you said. So
I recently had some great times with my routers, and I can honestly say that when your computer is going bad, like, and apparently is, you know, you have issues, and then you have like major issues. And when your router wants to go down, or you don't understand something, you click something wrong in your router and it affects your entire house all at the same time. Man, that's a scary, scary thought. But when you figure it out, when you win against the router, that's like crack up with fear. Is it a good time?
Well, I like to keep changing it up. I recently set it up so I've got two routers. I've got a router dedicated to my Internet of Things devices, and it's running in parallel. So that's an Airport Extreme, and that's running in parallel to the Netgear. And then they both go into the Frontier Fios router that I've emasculated and made just simply like a switch. So the real routing and Wi-Fi is done by the other two routers. But that means you go to get on our network and there's six of them and they're all mine. I don't know.
See, routers to me have always been really scary to mess with. So once I get it working, I don't touch it.
You don't want to touch it?
Ever.
I actually have three. I've got an Airport Extreme, a Time Capsule, and a WRT 1900.
Cool.
Running. That's actually the main router, and then the Apple routers kind of run off that, and it's all hardwired to spread the signal throughout the house and everything else, because my house isn't very, like, wide, but it's very tall. It's three stories tall.
Okay. So,
well, it's like two plus a walkout basement, whatever. So the signal doesn't like to carry between the floors at all, but each router will carry its own floor perfectly. So,
well, that's great if you've got Cat 5 or Cat 6 in the house.
Yeah, the phone lines that we don't use were run as Cat 5. So
nice.
Those over to actual, you know, Cat 5 cables, and they work perfectly. Well, it works perfectly for the first router. The other one I had to go with the Mocha adapter to send the cable line down here to the studio / basement office thing that I'm in now.
Man cave.
It will be. I plan on actually cleaning it up and putting some posters and stuff up. You know, I got some Niners posters and things like that to put up. That'll be official, you know, crappy man cave that every man has a point of life, right?
So Dave Hamilton and John F. Braun have just done a deep dive into these new mesh routers. That was pretty interesting on the Mac Geek Gab. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty interesting. Have you heard of Eero?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that have started doing this, and both of you guys might like this. One for not wanting to know about it, one for knowing about it. They're basically three routers that you get in a pack, and they know one of them is the main router. So you plug each of them in to three different spots in your house, and they, one of them will be plugged into your cable modem, of course, or your whatever kind of modem you have. And the three communicate amongst themselves and decide which devices should talk to which one. And they provide a tremendous coverage. There's another one by Netgear called Orbi that does really well. If you don't have hardwire in your house, that's probably a good choice. If you can hardwire all three of them, that's spectacular. But if you can't, the Orbi from Netgear sounds pretty good too. If I hadn't just bought this one single Wicked Fast router, I would have looked into this. But it's the main thing is you plug them in and it does all the figuring out. So yeah. You don't have to be real smart about it. And it does a spectacular job of, as Dave Hamilton says, bathing your house in internet, especially good for your three story tall thing. You can have one on each level and they're all going to pass. It's not like the old range extenders. They really are generating their own Wi-Fi and I think they're tri-band. So pretty. And it's like that MIMO stuff they're always yapping about.
Yeah.
Not really clear on what that is. I know what it stands for, but that doesn't help me understand yet.
Yeah. Right, right.
I've never been a fan of the signal boosters or the range extenders, just because I used to have one when I was in a really big house in Germany, and I kind of needed it to reach all of the nooks and crannies of the house, but my devices kept, changing their mind on which one they wanted to connect to, and it was constantly switching. And
part of the problem is what those things did was they would take a weak signal, have some loss, and broadcast that weak signal farther.
Yes.
And so you're already starting with a bad signal, losing some more, and then sending it on farther. So it really didn't make – it was the best they had at the time. But they were also single band, so it was the same radio that was receiving and then transmitting again. So these are dual band, so it's receiving, transmitting at the same time and doing a lot to boost the signal, I think.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. The whole reason I ended up with three routers – is because we had the Time Machine at the house, and then I was going to go to Korea for a year, and I wanted a router to take with me, so I ended up buying the Airport Extreme, figuring out when we combined houses again later when we moved up here, we just plug them in, they just work together. And that originally worked just fine until, we have 1 terabyte Mac here, it's our cap, and we were exceeding it, and I couldn't figure out why, and of course the Apple routers have no modeling software at all. So I had to pick up something that I could use to figure out what was eating up all the bandwidth. Found out that it was actually my drop cams, because we have three drop cams in the house.
Oh, and
wow. Set to 720 or 1080. They were killing, each of them were killing like 60 gigs a day.
Oh, jeez. Were they saving everything? Or transmitting everything constantly?
Because that's what drop cams do. They send it out to the server at all times. Then you can tap into it when you want to watch it.
Well, I guess it makes sense then.
Yeah, but I just turned down the resolution on those, and now they're fine. They're 10 gigs a day or whatever it ended up being at the end. But we're way below our cap now. But yeah, this is those dang drop cams. But I would never have known that if I'd stuck with just my Apple router, because they don't have any reporting at all.
Yeah, my buddy. Chris Ashley on the SMR podcast had the weirdest problem. He happened to mention that he's got Comcast, and Comcast technically had a limit, but they never enforced it. And he just idly mentioned on the show how big how much he was using. And I forget what the number was, but it was a ridiculous amount of data. I mean, it wasn't possible, actually. And so we kept challenging him on it. And I kept writing to these guys. I'm on the show on occasion, but I kept saying, I don't see how you could do it without streaming video on every device all day, every day, 24/7. You can't get that high. And he finally figured out what it was. He did something he thought was brilliant. He took what's Microsoft's email tool called?
Outlook.
Took his Outlook email database, and he thought, you know what would be really smart is if I, instead of keeping it local, I'll keep it in my OneDrive. So I put it in OneDrive, but it turns out it's a bundled database. So every time he would get, say, a spam email, it would transfer the entire bundle of every email he'd ever gotten before back up to OneDrive. So he was doing just these tiny little changes. You know, he would, you know, send hi mom, and that would be, you know, like 20 gigabytes would go up every time.
Oh my God.
It was the best technical mistake ever. It was hilarious.
That is insane. Oh my God. So not nearly as techie as you guys are. My geeky thing of the week, my girlfriend and I have been planning for a while now to do a Doctor Who podcast. But what's going to make our show different than the millions of them that are out there is we are starting with the very first episode from 1963 and are going to attempt this massive conquest of the entire show. Now, it remains to be seen how far we're actually going to get, but we actually started the process of wading through this massive catalog this week.
No way.
Yeah, and it's happening, man. It's in full force now. So we're probably in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start recording.
How much time do you have on your hands for that?
Well, see, we're kind of doing it smartly. We're not going to release it. We're not going to try to release it, you know, record and release weekly or anything like that. We're going to wait until we record an entire season's worth and then release it weekly as a season. And then we'll, you know, whenever season two starts, it might be a year later, it might be 6 months later, whatever. And we're going to wait until we have a full season recorded and then start releasing. So
that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Dave? I'll get it yet. God, I'm bad at names. Ken Ray and John Champion's Star Trek podcast?
No.
They did that same idea. They started at the original series and they're going through every single episode of Star Trek from the beginning.
That's awesome. See, that's something I could really get into. I've probably seen 90% of all the Star Trek that's out there already.
Oh, they've gone out of the way to not try to not talk about anything happening in current time. So you can start at the beginning of the show and start listening, and it's like it just happened. It just came out. They're partway through Next Generation right now. I think we're four or five seasons through. And it's fabulous because John Champion actually knows a whole lot of stuff about the production it's actually endorsed, let's call it, by Rod Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's son.
Yeah.
Who's a personal friend of theirs. And so they get access to a lot more information than you would normally think. But it's been really cool. They even went through the animated series.
That is so cool. The animated series is one of those things that I've seen maybe one episode when I was like six or something like that.
It sounds horrible, but it actually wasn't bad. The show, by the way, is called the Mission Log Podcast.
Ah, cool. Yeah, I might have to check that out. Maybe I can get some ideas on formatting our show.
How they do it?
Yeah, they do
kind of a synopsis of the show, and then in their case, they go through the morals, messages, and meanings. And does the show hold up?
Ah, I see. Okay, yeah, because we were kind of thinking about doing basically a recap to start and then talk about almost the same thing, sort of like the message of the show, what they're trying to get across, and then go into a little bit of the history, like the production history and how it kind of fits into the, the universe as a whole. And, just kind of go into things like that, continuity type things with, how it fits in with current stuff or if something significant, like, this is the first time you see a Dalek, or, things like that, that maybe lends itself more to people that are current Doctor Who fans. But also anybody that has never seen Doctor Who before will still, be able to follow along and know what we're talking about. So
that's kind of cool because Doctor Who's one of those things where you're either completely deeply into it and it's the center of your world, or you maybe caught an episode, but you're not really sure that's what it was. And right. I find it hard to talk to Doctor Who people because I didn't watch enough of it. I've watched down 4 or 5 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly where I'm at with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that Doctor Who was always a kind of a hole in my geek cred. I didn't really have any experience with it. Again, it was one of those things when I was a kid, I might've caught an episode or two on PBS on accident or something. Like way back in the Tom Baker years. And, but I always wanted to kind of start from the beginning, like we're doing now, but I never really had the opportunity or like somebody to watch it with.
Yeah.
But my girlfriend got really into the new series. So when, you know, what is it, 10 years ago or whatever, when they kind of, I don't want to say rebooted it because it's still in continuity with the original stuff. But like the reintroduction, I guess, of Doctor Who. So she's seen everything of that. And I caught probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes a season with her. So I kind of am current on what's happening and kind of, you know, I understand the universe of it. But for her, this is kind of a, you know, the doctor you love, here's where he came from. Me, it's kind of like, all right, I'm sort of familiar with the doctor. Let's really get into this. Let's start at the beginning and see where this goes, sort of thing.
So that'll be fun. Yeah, fun excuse to watch it together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So really looking forward to that.
And speaking of things that you can watch together. Kent, you've disappointed me. Sean Aker.
Yeah.
Like, sorry. So easy to say. You didn't even give me a hard name to say this week. What is this? The Happy Secret to Better Work.
Yeah. See, unfortunately, this talk was pretty much exactly what I wanted to talk about. Unfortunately, Sean Aker has an easily pronounceable name. The Allison for the Uninitiated, the bit is that I try to find the TED Talk with the speaker who has the most unpronounceable name in English. And I always try to get Amos to say it.
Well, maybe I did a little better when we get to mine.
Right. But no, okay, so Sean Aker presented The Happy Secret to Better Work. And the basic premise is that people have this false idea that the harder we work, the more successful we're going to be so that we can be happy later on. So, basically work really hard your whole life, retire, and then that's when I'll have time to be happy. When it really is kind of, we had that backwards. We need to be happy, do something that be in an environment that makes us happy. That way we will be more productive, more successful. And then, and that way we're just maintaining our happiness at that point. And one of the things towards the end of the talk, one of the things that really stuck out to me was he was talking about work environments and how that can really affect your productivity, not just your productivity, but your actual personal happiness. If your boss is always on your case, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you get this thing done in this particular fashion? Or, you're not real friendly with your coworkers. The lighting is bad at work. If you're just in a bad work environment, you're not going to be productive. But if you're in a place where, people encourage one another, people are ready to help each other, open sharing of ideas, there's respect, people tend to be happier and more productive and therefore happier. And
so,
to me,
so we should all work at Google, Apple, or Facebook then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, but for me personally, the reason I wanted to talk about this talk was it really kind of drew a line in the sand, contrasting my active duty time, especially the last few years of my active duty time, with my current situation. Because as you know, Amos, when I retired, Allison, I retired from the Air Force about a year and a half ago, after a 20-year career. And the last couple of years, I was a master sergeant, which is a senior NCO. So I was put in charge of a section of about 40 people, and which I think is great. Like, that was my goal. I wanted to be a master sergeant flight chief because I wanted to lead people, teach people. Hopefully mentor some people, be a positive influence on their life and their career. That's what I really wanted to do. However, the reality of it was that I was stuck behind a desk, not able to go out and be with my people. I was constantly doing paperwork. I was going to meetings. I was constantly being, I'm hesitant to use the word harassed, but I'm going to use it anyway. Constantly harassed by upper supervision to why are you busting this suspense? Where is this paperwork? You need to get on this. Or, that airman that I talked to you about last week, like, why didn't you punish him the way that I said you should have punished him? Why, just constant, just harping. and it was miserable.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was absolutely miserable, and I could not wait to retire. I retired at the absolute earliest possible time that I could have done it.
Literally, the legal minimum to retirement is 20 years and 0 days. He retired at 20 years, 0 days.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, I could not freaking wait. But the things that I loved about my military career was the mission and the people. And so what I did was I got a job. I still work for the Air Force, but now I'm a civilian. So I got a civil service job to work for the Air Force. And the environment, the office that I work in now is absolutely perfect for my like workplace happiness.
Sanity.
Sanity, yes. Like because I'm, you know, I feel respected and valued. I really love the people that I work with. I'm given the, not just the responsibility, but the freedom to do my job. Like I was hired to do these things, and I've been empowered to do what I was hired to do. And it sounds so
obvious, but that's not necessarily common as you, one would hope, right?
Right, exactly. And that was, to me, it was night and day with my active duty time and my civil service time. Like it's this talk, like, exactly explains why I'm so much happier now than I was, say, 2 years ago.
I used to mentor a lot of those kids when I was working. And one of the things I'd always say to them is, you got to realize that you're at work 50% of your waking hours at a minimum.
Yes.
50%. I mean, you're not happy 50% of your waking hours. You've really got to fix it. You got to find another way.
Absolutely.
It took me medication back in Texas to find my happiness. I'll be straight up honest with you. I was going to mental health about every other week because the work environment was just that hostile.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I was so glad to leave.
That's pretty common for, because Amos and I are both flightline maintainers, working on aircraft.
Eat your own, man.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. Like it's very hostile. That was a perfect word to describe it. It's not very conducive to
anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. We have the greatest Air Force on the planet, probably the greatest branch of the military on anywhere in any country. But it's, I don't know, when you're actually in the middle of it and making it happen. It's like, how, like, does this meat grinder? Yeah. It's like, are all of the other ones like that much worse to work for? I don't know. It's amazing.
So, so Dr. Elizabeth Loftus,
how did you?
How reliable is your, what's that thing called?
Memory.
Yes. That's what it is. Alice, would you like to share this with us?
Yeah. So Dr. Loftus is a professor at UC Irvine, and she's a scientist who works in memories. And do you remember in the 1990s when it was all hip to talk about repressed memories, mm-hmm. when everybody was going to hypnosis and finding out that they were, demon gods possessed them when they were five and that stuff? Yeah. Well, she's the one that actually debunked that. And caused it to stop, caused them to stop doing it. And what she does is she can take people and basically implant any memory she wants in on the order of 75% of the people. So she can take a group of people, you guys, and she can say, convince you within a week that you were lost in a mall as a child, and you'll tell the story of what you were wearing and where your little brother was, and describe it in detail exactly what happened. And it's an event that never ever happened. So she works in this because there's a lot of people who have been convicted of crimes because of eyewitness testimony. And eyewitness testimony is basically really, really bad. It's unbelievably inaccurate. And what she tries to prove is, and she talks about this in this, is she proves that you can make these memories happen to people. You can convince them between when they first see a lineup to who they end up convicting, that they change their story over time of exactly what happened and how confident they are that something happened. Mm-hmm. The reason that this particular talk is so near and dear to my heart is one of her students is Dr. Marianne Gary, who now works. She's a psychologist doing the same kind of work and research in New Zealand, and is a good personal friend of ours. So there's a personal connection. And just recently, Dr. Loftus was awarded the John Maddox Prize. It's a new prize. It's only been around for about 5 years, but she won it for standing up for science, because she was attacked personally. She had death threats. She had people writing to the university trying to get her fired, all because of the science that she had done. And they wanted to believe that these repressed memories that they were coming up with and these false memories were true, and they weren't. And she just stood up for science. She got in a really bad way for a while because of this.
See, and I hear all this, and it's all amazing. I'm hopeful that one day, you know, someone like her can come along and debunk these anti-vaxxers. Like, can we get that to happen anytime soon?
Well, like, it's not debunking them that's hard, because that's been done. It's getting them to shut up. That seems to be the difficult part.
The guy that originated the whole crap load of falsities has already admitted that it was just crap load of falsities, and they still keep going.
The best video I've seen, by the way, on that is who are the magicians? The great big guy and the little guy.
Penn and Teller.
Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller have a video on it that is just spectacular. Yeah. It's done tongue in cheek, but it's fabulous. It's about statistics.
Yeah, and it's just their intro on that episode, because it's an episode of bullshit that they.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the 4 minute intro or whatever. If you can find it, just look that up. Just Penn and Teller. Bullshit and anti-vaxxers or whatever, and just the intro just explains the whole thing. It's just great.
It's very theatrical, as they are, but it's just it's just perfect.
My thing with memory is that even when I was little, I knew that my memories were fluid, and I don't know if that's something that most kids, I'm sure they do at some point, you realize, hey, my memory is changing or whatever. But some of the things that I remember distinctly, my mom doesn't remember at all, and vice versa. And it's caused a major, I don't want to say a major rift, but it's one of those things that comes up in conversation considerably often when we're around each other for too long. And it's one of those things like, okay, she goes to her way and I go to my way. And we just like, neither one of us remembers the truth anymore, but we both know for certain it wasn't the other person's way.
Yeah. Oh, so. Absolutely. I'm that way with my brother. We do that all the time. And he always just claims, because he's older, he remembers better, that I was just a little kid when it happened. And he was, you know, he was 13 when it happened. So he remembers it. And it's like, I'm certain that neither one of us are right now.
Yeah.
I had Dr. Gary on my show a couple of times. And basically when she's done with the show, you don't know what you know anymore. By the time you're done listening to her, you have no clue. You know, nothing you remember as a child is true.
That's awesome. The plasticity of the memory.
You know, and
exactly.
Not just memory. I think another issue is that we also have flawed perception. So two people can see an event happen from basically the same angle, but they will interpret it differently than the other person.
She gives that example, a little bit of that example, where she says we show two people, or we show people two cars hitting each other. Mm-hmm. And we ask one group how fast were the cars going when they hit each other. And we ask the other group how fast were the cars going when they smashed into each other. And one group on average says 33 miles per hour. The other group says 41, just because they use the word smashed. It might not even be that you saw something different. It's the way you were asked changed what you perceived.
So crazy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we have these like inherent biases, whether it's a word bias, like in this case, smash versus whatever the other word was.
Just hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit. Yeah. We have bias toward, you know, different vocabulary or just even language inflection. But we also have biases for like maybe. I always think of fast cars being red. So I'm going to think that the red car was going faster.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, different, all sorts of biases. And let's not even get into like, you know, racial bias and gender bias and all of that sort of stuff. So our perception is just, it's flawed from go. And then you throw in our memory imperfection, and it's just, yeah, it's amazing that we remember anything with any degree of accuracy.
This is going to be a little bit weird, Kent.
Yeah,
I think this is the first episode where me and you both have separate videos, separate TED Talks. Our guest has a TED Talk, and all three of them are recommendations.
Oh, usually they aren't. They're like, this one stinks.
Yeah, usually we'll have one. It'll be like, yeah, this one's bad, and then the other two will be great, or somebody won't have one. This time, all three of us have a TED Talk, and all three of them are recommendations.
Yeah, I think Tim this is Urban, the first.
Yeah, Tim Urban, Inside the Mind of a Master Procrastinator. I actually had my wife pick this out for us on the way home yesterday, and she played it to the Bluetooth in the Jeep, so I could listen while she watched. Mm-hmm. And this is my wife to a T. This is probably every procrastinator to a T. And as he says in the video, everyone's a procrastinator at some level. It's a matter of how strong is your panic monster. And the way he describes it is, you know, everybody's got this sound person at the wheel of their mind, and they're cruising along, and they're making good judgments. But then this little monkey comes up, and the monkey just wants to play and have fun all the time. Well, the takes over, because, you know, until that deadline hits, you don't care. And then all of a sudden the deadline is right there, and the panic monster comes in, and you do your best work the last hours of the time period. And it described it perfectly. I loved it. This talk was funny, funny, funny. And it's got great animations and everything else. And it was just genuinely, like, I could hear the laughter in my wife's or the voice of my wife's laughter, the tone of her laughter was changing as she was acknowledging more and more how much it applied to her.
Oh, really?
Nice. It was great.
That sounds fantastic.
Now, Kent, I know you are a master procrastinator.
Yeah, I'll get back to you about that.
Listen, how much procrastination do you succumb to?
I'm an engineer. You know, I make lists and I check things off and I get things done. I'm not a getting things done person. I don't want to say that. That's for sure. But I'm not big on procrastination, really. I tend to do stuff.
Yeah. My level of procrastination is directly proportionate inversely proportionate to my level of interest.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The more interested I am in it, man, I'm going at it. But as soon as I get bored, bottom of the pile, don't care. See, moving on.
My procrastination tends to be focused on plans, because I'm more of an implementation person. But if I have to plan something, if I'm put in charge of the, the master plan for something, I tend to want to be a perfectionist. So I want to make sure that I'm not going to screw something up. So I try to plan it out as much as possible, which means that the process takes forever. But if I'm given a task, okay, you have these five tasks, go. I'm kind of like you in the sense of the checklist. Like, I'm like, all right, task number one is done. Moving on to the next one. Task number two is done. So forth.
And
he'll put you in charge of making the list.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going to go. One of the things I want to talk about a little bit later is finding to-do apps. And I just started using Wunderlist, and I told Kent, hey, I'm going to start using this for the shows, because I'm losing track. I got too many kids in the house. I'm losing track of where I am with the editing. And you're asking, hey, when's the show going to come out? And I got to do this, and you're getting guests and this and that. I'm going to use Wunderlist, and we're just going to share it out. And that's just how it's going to be. And if you don't use it, I don't care, but I have to have something. And he's sitting there saying, well, if you give me a list, I'll just mark it off and just keep on going. I'm sitting there thinking, man, except for this.
See, electronic lists, I don't know. I'm more of a sticky note kind of guy.
I gotta start mailing him some papers actually in this.
Wait, so you have tried using Wunderlist and he still doesn't do it? I thought he was the getter things done guy.
I just downloaded it last night, so.
Oh, okay. It might work. My husband and I started using that a while ago, and it's the only thing we've actually stuck with. I do find, though, that when the list gets too long, I start using pieces of paper instead, because I don't like looking at that big list. So I've got a great big list on my on Wunderlist. I have this checklist right on my desk right now that I've got like eight things, because I know if I put it on that list, I won't get it done. But if I had somebody who got stuff done, I would totally just start going, hey, Kent, do this, do this, do this, do this.
Right.
my wife's more the, see, I have multiple lists because I have multiple people that I'm dealing with. My wife on the, you know, just the little reminders app on the iPhone, we have shared throughout the family. And that's the only, she just needs single steps. It's like, get new plates for the truck. Okay. That's one step for her and she's good. But for me, I'm like, I got to get new plates for the truck. That means I got to make sure I got my insurance card. I got to make sure I got this. You know, I have to break it down one step deeper than that.
And yeah, Wunderlist lets you do that, by the way. Yep, you can have subtasks, but you can't go any further than that.
Yeah.
And, so it's not too complicated. And it works on your iPhone. It works on your Mac. It works on, you've got a client. You can do it web-based. You pretty much have no excuse not to do it. Yeah. That's why I write stuff on paper when I don't like my list.
And I tried GTG or GTD, things like OmniFocus and things like that. You can break it down into infinite levels of
density,
and I just end up getting swamped. So I'm thinking Wunderlist is going to be right down my alley, right down that middle road.
Yeah. I read the book. It was when I had, was transitioning between two jobs. They actually gave me nothing to do for a while, which was really weird. And so I went through and I took all my folders in my file cabinet, and I labeled them all with pretty little labels and followed the whole thing and everything, but it only worked because I had nothing to do. So I had plenty of time to do all this weird crap. But my friend Dorothy is a big GTD person. She uses OmniFocus and she swears by it. And I always have this vision of how she gets everything done. And I said, so do you ever have those tasks that you just keep moving on to the next day and to the next day and the next day? And she goes, oh, yeah, all the time. It's like, oh, okay, so you're still normal.
See, at now, work, I'm totally a sticky notes kind of guy, a post-it guy. And I'll put a task on a sticky note and then – and I guess that's part of my flatline mentality. But the way that I will push a task back is I'll take it off the top of the stack and I'll put it on the bottom of the stack. I'm like, yeah, it's still on my list, but I'll get to it later.
Okay. Now, Allison, that almost seemed like a pretty good review of Wunderlist right there. And I noticed that on your podcast, that's something you do quite often is get a great overview on an app or some hardware. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about your podcast?
So, gosh, talk about my show. That how much time do we have left? So my show is named purposely so that you can't ever claim I'm off topic. It's called the NoSillaCast, has no meaning whatsoever. And it's actually my name spelled backwards, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. Now you know how to spell my name. It's NoSillaCast, and it's a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. So that lets me talk about pretty much anything I want that's kind of in the tech realm. And so I really like to play with new software. I will load software you brought up this OBS software. I'm installing it right now. I mean, I'm just going to do that. I remember I installed 3 applications on a BlackBerry at a stoplight once on my way home from work. And I mean, it's hard to find BlackBerry software at the time, but I mostly like software, but I love hardware stuff too. I just got the new MacBook Pro, the Touch Bar MacBook Pro, and the idea of playing with new hardware and messing everything up, that's just the most fun ever. That's pretty much the core of that show. My other show is called Chit Chat Across the Pond, and there used to be one show. So, like, I put in the show notes a link to the episode where Dr. Marianne Gary was on talking about memory. And back then, it was all one giant show, and it was just getting longer and longer and longer. And finally, one day, I said, I'm just going to crack it in half. So you get 2 shows a week, and Chit Chat Across the Pond is always tech focused. Every other week, it's kind of uneven right now, and I'm trying to think whether I need to break this apart. Every other week, it's just a light and interesting tech interview. It's me talking to somebody in tech that I think is interesting. It might be about accessibility. It might be about some cool hardware tool. You never know what it's going to be. Then the other every other week was with a guy named Bart Bouchatz, who is a real propeller beanie geeky. So he's working on a series right now called Programming by Stealth. So he started with teaching me HTML and then into CSS, and now we're into JavaScript. It's been going for like 35 episodes now, so that's, what, 70 weeks? And he also did one called Taming the Terminal. If you ever want to know anything about using the terminal, you want to learn, get really good at it, he did it's like at least a 25-part series on that we released as its own podcast as well. So that's kind of the 3 different things that go on in the Podfeet paradise. I don't know. I'm looking for another word with P to go with that. Podfeet Productions, maybe.
There you go. That fits.
Something that I've noticed about, of course, my introduction to you was on DTNS. I mean, we've already discussed that. And then listening to your shows, it was the matter of you don't take a really serious, deep dive look at any particular issue, but you kind of break things apart into real experiences. And you don't try to dig further than you should. You cover what's there and you just do it in a casual manner that's really easy to follow along. And I find that so different because most tech podcasts, regardless of how tech they are, including this one, a lot of times we reach too far and we're trying to almost show off our knowledge. And it's not like that with your shows at all. It's a really casual experience. And sometimes, like the latest two episodes, I noticed you ran over the whole migration thing once and kind of quickly. And then the next episode you came back and relayed it again and then said, okay, well, here's the actual solution. And it was just in a real personable manner.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I do sometimes, I got a lot of applause for something I did once where I did dive really deep. And it was a funny thing. It was a review of a device called Backtrack. It's a breathalyzer, and it's this little USB or Bluetooth breathalyzer that you can. It's around $100, and they said in the literature that they complied. It was the same kind of stuff that the cops use. And I was like, well, I wonder what that is. And I started digging, and I ended up actually reading and studying the reports of how the data was collected and how they did the comparison studies and who actually contributed the studies. Like, it was actually written by the Backtrack company. But it was accepted by an FDA one on that. I think it was FDA. It was quite a while ago. But I mean, it was one of those things where I just kept getting more and more interested, and people actually liked it that I dove just like pinhole deep into this one little topic. But it was kind of fun.
I actually saw those at Sam's Club right before I went to Korea and thought about buying one. I was like, no, that's probably not a good idea.
Why? I think it's pretty cool. I mean, a way of empirically knowing, should I drive? Because you're not always the best judge, right?
Well, I didn't really have a vehicle over there, but anytime you get around a bunch of soju and give me a breathalyzer, that's just a challenge accepted.
Oh, so. Yeah, you're trying to see how high the number will go, you mean? I never once thought of using it that way. That's awesome.
It's like the Korea Olympics. It's like the Osan Olympics.
It just wouldn't turn out good. It would be we wouldn't be here right now.
I just can't believe that never occurred to me. That's awesome.
I won. Oh crap. Oh crap, he's dead.
Yeah. Oh man, that's hilarious. And then Uber got invented and we stopped worrying about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That literally is the last time we used it was like, oh, we'll just always have someone else drive.
Yeah, exactly. And oh.
Yeah, God, I wish there were ride sharing in the town that I live in. I'm so far in the boondocks of the desert that we don't have ride share here.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. Super sad.
So you've been going for nearly 11 years now, which is something I didn't know. I knew it had been a long time. I mean, you're on episode 603 or something like that.
Something like that. Actually, it's 2005. No, it's 11 going on 12, I think, right?
Insane.
2005. Yeah. For a solo show.
Yeah.
Actually, that's probably easier than with someone else because somebody always splits off. But yeah, I am very good at something habitual. Like I told you, I worked for 35 years for the same company. I've been married to the same man for, I think, 33 years, if my math is correct. I don't change anything. I've been going to the same hairdresser for like 20 years. I don't even like her that much, but it's what I do. You know, once I start doing something, I'm in.
Yeah. What got you started with the whole podcasting thing? Like 2005, it was brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. So it started in October of 2004 and I started in May of 2005. It was a couple of things. I am the kind of person that will stop somebody at a grocery line and say, hey, did you see this really cool app? You need this. And I thought maybe instead I should talk to people who care, you know, who wanted to listen. And, you know, that was a new thing. But if you listen to my very first show, what I said I was going to do was I was going to tell you about things I'd read in the Wall Street Journal. So this, when Walter Mossberg was there, I would read his text things and I would talk about him. And I did a couple of shows like that. And then I went to, I used to get to go to the All Things Digital conference. And so I talked about what I learned at those. Those were amazing. If anybody doesn't know what those are, they were tech. It was a very short tech conference, like a day and a half, 2 days, something like that. And, they had huge names. That was where Steve Jobs and Bill Gates got on stage together. And I was there. And so that wasn't that year, but I would talk about those kind of things. And then as soon as I got done with those five shows, I stopped and I just didn't do anything for a little while. And this guy, Neil, a Jumbo Shrimp in Florida, wrote to me and said, "Where's the podcast?" And I knew that somebody was listening. Yeah. And that changed everything. It was like, I am going to do that. I'm going to keep going. So it was a good way to really be able to talk to people about what I was passionate about and not necessarily bother to the neighbors. I still bother everybody about it in line at the grocery store, though.
Would you consider yourself a pioneer?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not the first Mac podcaster. Adam Christensen was the first. But certainly, you know, breaking ground. I mean, I did my feed by hand, coded it by hand to start with. Mm-hmm. And the way I figured out, Leo Laporte had started doing a podcast and I downloaded his feed and looked at it and broke it apart. And it's actually pretty easy to read. It's got like a bracketed thing on either side that says title and, you know, it says episode name, episode date. The thing that screwed me up was one of them was length, and it was this big long digit number. It's like, what length? What was that? I was like, is that seconds? What it was bits. It was total bits. And so that one took me a while to figure out how to find that one. But once I got that, I did it by hand. I eventually moved on to using a product called Feeder from Reinvented Software that lets me do the feed very, very easily now. But, so yeah, it was kind of hammer and chisel back then to get it done. It's been an amazing journey. And I think, you know, I thought I was going to be telling people stuff, but I was saying during the break that I do a live show now on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And that show is me creating the show. So it's not a live production. It's simply watching me do the recording, stop. I talk to the chat room. I insert items. I stop and chat. And what that started to cause was a community. And the community became a much bigger thing about this than the tech itself. It's sort of an excuse to get together. And it's just some of the funniest things that have happened. I don't know if you can see right here, but there's a sausage grinder on my, where is it? That way. Whoop, nope. Finger the wrong direction. There's a sausage grinder on my mantle behind me. And that was a gift from a listener because they often refer to it as watching the sausage get made. So somebody, Kevin, big in Virginia, sent me that. There's a twit brick here. It's really hard to point when there's a lag. There it is. There's a twit brick that George from Tulsa sent in and a couple of posters. And there have been all kinds of little gags and pranks that have happened because these people have gotten to know together. The Geekiest Thing Ever podcast sprung up from two guys meeting each other in the live chat room. So they don't even care about me anymore, you know.
So what I'm getting from this is, one, you broadcast you making the show as opposed to broadcasting the show.
Correct. So,
and we should probably try that. And two, almost immediately you got viewer feedback. Kent, we should really try that.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
Did you guys know there is a live chat room? I don't know if you've ever, there's these people they're talking down here.
Yeah, actually Dark Redeemer brought up another P word for you. Podneer.
Podineer. Oh, I like it.
I like that word a lot. But no, I should Allison, oh no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I should say that one of the common phrases in the chat room is that woman still talking in the corner, that annoying woman there. So,
oh, right. no, but you bring up a really good point. You were talking about our chat that we're displaying on our stream that we interact with. You're absolutely correct. That is immediate feedback. And you talk about community. Diamond Club is a community very much like what you're talking about. We've made some really good friends. It's just, it's absolutely wonderful. The people that come together in a community surrounding shows like this. And that's one of the reasons that this New Year's Eve, we are doing what is now officially titled the New Year's Eve Streamathon.
Oh no.
Yeah. Where we're going to be streaming, not us personally, for the entire time, but we're organizing a 27 hour stream
in total. 27 hour stream. Yeah. Last year was, I did 24 hours, 24 minutes consecutively, all on my own with a bunch of help from some people, but I was there the entire time. Yep. Not doing that again this year. So this year, as many people as possible, as many other streamers on DiamondClub.tv, to come in and really put forth an effort to raise some money for extralife.org, which we'll have more details coming soon. And we've got some swag to auction off and to give out there. And it's going to be a great time. It's for a good cause. And really, the basis is to make sure that no Diamond Clubber or Frog Pantser is alone on New Year's Eve. So everyone will have a chance to celebrate New Year's Eve with a live chat room and someone to watch and someone to entertain.
No matter where
to hang
you
out
are,
with.
Yeah, no matter where you are on the planet, there will be a DCTV stream at your New Year.
Yeah.
So at midnight at your.
There's something about Diamond Club and Frog Pants that is the warmest, hardest people I've met.
Yeah.
Steve and I went to Nerdtacular. It was pretty fun. And right after we retired, everybody said, "What are you going to do tomorrow?" And we said, "We're going to Nerdtacular," as one does. And we didn't really fit in there because we aren't gamers. But I've never met such friendly, warm people. Mm-hmm. And I realized what it was I was with my people in that all of us were the last people picked for the softball team or the kickball team. Right.
Yeah.
And so all of us are just really happy when someone talks to us. And I think Scott and Brian and Tom and those guys and Jury, they engender a kindness. And, you know, there's a feeling and a heart to it that I haven't seen in anything else that's really, really cool.
Yeah. Any chance?
And then they let you guys in. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, We snuck in the back door as we do. Right. Is there any chance you're going to be at Nerdtacular this year?
No, we actually didn't know about it until after it was sold out. I think it's sold out, right?
Yeah, but I think Scott's trying to open up a few more tickets. He's trying to find some room.
I'm sure you could put a word in and get some.
Hmm. Yeah, I bet you and Steve could get in.
Think we could make that happen?
Yeah,
you guys are going.
We are. We've got everything but the plane tickets.
Yeah.
So we'll be there. We'll be at South by Southwest and at Nerdtacular this year.
Even if it just that location was spectacular too. We went for a hike up into the mountains there, and one point we went back to our hotel room with Adam Christensen and just had beers and looked at the mountain. That was actually one of my best memories, other than meeting all the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. Really neat.
This will be our first year there, and my fourth South by, so this is gonna be kind of a big year.
Yep. So anybody that's interested in the streamathon, you can go to yolo420.com/marathon2017, marathon 2017. And there are some very exciting updates coming to that very soon. We have certain things in stone that we're just not ready to announce yet. We've got a bunch of other stuff in the works that we're still tweaking a little bit, but it's all very exciting stuff. Go there, sign up if you want, or just kind of lurk in there, check it out every couple of days, because there is some really cool stuff coming there real soon.
Yeah. Hey, you know, what else is really cool, man? When you have a piece of equipment, say you've got a Nintendo Wii.
Oh, which now, I do.
They've been out for a while. Stuff's starting to break. It's getting harder and harder to find replacement parts, right? So, I mean, where would you go for something like that, right?
Well, yeah. And see, the thing is that I have, like you said, a Nintendo Wii, but the sensor bar went bad on mine. And I go to Walmart. They don't have these things to replace it. We don't have a nerd store here anymore. It's not like I have a Fry's Electronics or anything like that. So, you know, I'm kind of left at the mercy of the internet. I went to one site where I could get a replacement. It was like $25 or something like that. It'd be really cool.
How about $6?
Oh, dude, I'd probably buy two of them for $6.
$6. Then you should head on over to geekandgamergear.com. Geek, the letter N, gamergear.com. Cruise on over there. Get you a $6 Nintendo Wii replacement sensor bar. Use the code Ritual Misery, and you get it for $5.40 because they're going to give you 10% off your first order.
Man, is that your entire order, or is that just one item?
Your entire first order, not just your first item. No your entire way. First order, 10% off. Geekandgamergear.com. Cruise on by there. Use the code Ritual Misery at checkout. And you help this show. You help yourself. Everybody's happy. It's just great stuff, man.
Yep. Really cool stuff there. Check it out. Geekandgamergear.com. Ritual Misery at checkout for 10%.
Problem solved. Now, sometimes you got to buy replacement parts as gifts. And and I got to tell you, I saw some crazy Black Friday deals and some crazy, what is it, Pink or Maroon Monday or what is it now?
What? Cyber Monday is the only thing I
know. Cyber Monday.
Yeah, they keep changing the color on it, though. It messes me up every time.
I've never even heard a color associated with it.
Now the thing that got me this year, and I tried to nail down some specifics I wanted to talk about. What it came down to was on Amazon, every time I looked at their little deals of the day all through the weekend, everything seemed so outdated. USB 2.0 hubs. At one point they had some adaptors for like PS2 to USB adapters. Like why are you going to sell a pack of five of those? Who the hell wants that stuff? So I was looking at this, and I'm always tech-minded when I'm looking at these things, like, ooh, is there any good deals that I can kind of snag up real quick? I didn't really see anything. Did you guys see any really good deals out there for techs?
I didn't.
No. And, you know, something that I've noticed is, you might have a TV for cheap, like let's say a 55-inch TV for like half of what you would normally get a 55-inch TV for, but when you look at the stats, they manufacture like Black Friday specific products with lower stats. I'm not even kidding. I think this is a real thing. Laptops. I know they do this with laptops where, yep. You know, the reason that they're selling, you know, $89 laptops at Walmart or whatever is because it's a piece of shit that it doesn't do all of the things. It's not as fast. It doesn't have the memory. It doesn't have the bells and whistles that, you know, you pay $100 more and you get all that stuff. They make these really attractive prices for mediocre products.
For something you don't really want.
Yeah. That's kind of how I see Black Friday. Fight the crowds for inferior stuff. And
I did do one fun thing on Cyber Monday but again, it was something old. I got an Amazon Echo Dot recently, just kind of for $50 to find out what all the hullabaloo was about. And as I suspected, I haven't done too much. Oh, he's showing his off. I haven't figured out much to do with it. It's kind of cool. I've had a little bit of fun with it, but you know, I'm not worshiping it like a lot of people, but, I got this thing in the mail where it was the most brilliant marketing thing I've ever seen in my life. They said, Amazon said, look, if you order a Fire Stick, or they had a bunch of stuff, but the thing I wanted was a Fire Stick. They said, if you order this using voice, you'll get 25% off and a $10 Amazon gift card.
Oh, wow.
So, but think about what they did. I bought the Echo Dot. They got me to buy something else. The thing they got me to buy was something that lets you buy and rent movies from them. And what did they give me in return? A gift card so I could buy more stuff.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it was beautiful. And when I did it, I just said, I called out her name and I said, buy a Fire Stick. And she said, it'll be here on Thursday. It'll be this much money. Do you want to order it? And I said, yes. I mean, it was spectacular. Now here's the problem.
Sinker.
Oh yeah. Hook, line, sinker, and a net. I mean, I was down for the count. It was fabulous. But then I wanted to buy an Amazon Kindle for somebody, a Paperwhite. So I said, hey, whatever name is, I said, order a Kindle Paperwhite. And she insisted on telling me about the one that doesn't have the ads. And the ads are great on Kindles. Like, who cares? They're just they're the lock screen, basically, right? And so she kept telling me it was $139. I was like, no, it isn't. I'm not buying that one. And I tried every way I could think of to order it, and she wouldn't do it.
That's funny.
That's crazy. Now, you mentioned gift cards. And every year Apple puts on a Black Friday sale. And every year it seems it gets more and more ridiculous and less useful. This year, you buy everything for full price, and they were giving gift cards away for more Apple stuff.
Was it in it? Was it like you got a free gift card with it?
Yeah. So you.
Well, that's good.
You buy a $2,000 laptop and you get a $100 gift card. And but there were no discounts anywhere to be seen.
And see, I like the gift card thing. That doesn't bother me because you know you're going to spend $100.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, because your next product is going to be, you know, $800 or something, and I'd get it for $700 instead of $800. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Target, they said that Target's revenues or profit was in the black the last quarter. They think mostly because of what they've done with gift cards and rebates and stuff for selling Apple products. So,
oh wow,
I know Target's really big on those.
Interesting. You know, Amos, I kind of lied. I said that I didn't see anything interesting deals this Black Friday. I didn't see any interesting deals from any of the big box stores. I did see a ton of good deals and interesting sales and things from independent people. Like for example, Justin with his Contender game, he was selling the deck for, it was less than half price, I think.
Yeah. $17.76.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. $17.76. Brian's Scam Stuff site had all kinds of sales going on. Other creators that I've seen. Yeah, there you go. There's the Contender, and stickers are DIAF. I don't know if he was doing a sale on there or not. But yeah, there was a lot of independent creators that I checked out their stuff, and there's really cool deals on there because this is all cool stuff. You know, they're not making much money off of this stuff.
Yeah.
And for them to offer it at really attractive prices is something. It seems like they're making more of an effort than the Amazons and the Apples. And
yeah, it's better that way anyway.
Yeah.
I was talking about Apple earlier, but I did get iPads for all the kids. So all five of them, I got on a Best Buy deal well before Black Friday.
oh, wow.
Yeah. And, two of them don't know it yet, but they don't listen to the show, so it doesn't matter. And since the other ones don't listen to the show either, I also picked up a set of Rogue One tickets for them for opening night at 7:00.
Oh, best dad, dude, ever.
That is awesome. I wish I could reserve at my, like I said, I'm in a little podunk town in the middle of the desert. We don't get to buy tickets in advance. Oh man. Do you get to pick your seat too? Do they have reserved seats?
It's open seating.
Open. Yeah. Okay.
We're not that bougie up here in the bush, as they say.
Yeah. In Siberia or wherever it is you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, right next door.
So Allison, speaking of Star Wars, are you a Star Wars fan yourself?
I'm a little more Star Trek than Star Wars. Well, a lot more Star Trek than Star Wars, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
I like the previous movie, but I'm a little annoyed at the whole idea of well, wait a minute. Now we have to. You just got me attached to these characters, and now I have to go get other characters. It's the reason I don't like college sports. It's like, wait a minute, I'm all about the people. You know?
gotcha. Well, on this show, we play a game, unbeknownst to regular watchers of our show. We play Ritual Liberty. Basically, what we do is, throughout the show, we are secretly mining the conversation for words that are said, usually by the guest. Sometimes it might be a word or a phrase that comes from one of the hosts. But basically, we take these words and we throw them into a database that spits them out into a Mad Libs style, basically a Mad Libs ripoff thing that we do. Anyway, we pick a story for each of our guests to plug these words into. And the story that we have chosen for you this week is actually based on Star Wars.
Okay.
Maybe we should have gotten a Star Trek one set up.
Well, me, but this will work. You just set it up wrong. So in response to Star Wars, the Rogue One, a Star Wars story, tickets coming on sale this week. We're doing one in the style of Star Wars. So, Kent, is it my turn to read or your turn to read? I think it's your turn to read. It's your turn.
I think it is. Yeah.
I did SpongeBob last time.
That's right. Yeah. So it's my turn to read it. Okay.
So, won't you go ahead and tell us Allison's Star Wars story here.
All right. So Allison Sheridan, a Star Wars story. All right. So here we go. It was a hostile day on Tatooine when the protocol router, C-3PO, met the weird droid R2-D2, and a legendary relationship began. The two droids are as different as night and VPN. C-3PO is scared of his own munchkin, while R2 never lets any memory get in his way. But these droids are both heroes, just as much as any Jedi panic monster. 3PO is always at the ready to offer the interesting odds, and you can always find R2 on top of Luke's spaceship even during the most techie adventures. They had their share of troubles while debunking with the Rebel forces. Who can forget the time R2 was hit by a podcast during the attack on the first Death Breathalyzer? Or the time 3PO was unassembled in Cloud City, only to be put back together by Chewie, who put his pod feet on backwards. No one knows how habitually they've suffered while procrastinating against the dark side.
Very nice, Ken. Very nice.
That's great. That's pretty clever. I like it.
Oh, man. So before we get out of here, Allison, where can people find you directly? Like, you know, every podcaster's favorite part.
Yeah. Well, I did have one specific thing I wanted to plug. In general, it's podfeet.com is the best way to find me. And on Twitter, I'm podfeet. And the thing I wanted to plug was something I think you guys might really want to enjoy. In August of 1945, my father, Ensign John Paul Moorhead, was in a typhoon in World War II off the coast of Okinawa. Mm. He was on an LST, which was a ship that was not... which was a ship that was not expected to be able to come back because they actually let the contracts for these ships before they finished the first test ship. So they were just doing everything real slipshod and everything. And he lived through this typhoon, and he wrote a letter back to my mother and his parents describing in detail what it was like to live through a typhoon. So I have this letter, and I had noted voiceover artist Ron David read it for the podcast. When you hear this guy's voice, you're going to know it. Did you ever watch the series Wings on National Geographic? Ron David. I thought about reading it myself, but I don't quite have the right voice and I goof around a lot. Instead, this is Ron in a real studio, and it's only about 15 minutes long, but it's a pretty cool story. And I think my father tells it well, and Ron reads it really, really well. And I put it out right before Veterans Day. And I'd be really honored if you guys would take a look at that. So I put a link to it in the show notes. It's Chit Chat Across the Pond, cause it is across a pond, right? It was Okinawa, number 463.
And I just dropped the link in the chat room.
Very nice.
And I got to tell you, Allison, you keep bringing back these personal sides of the story. Me and Kent have both been through typhoons in Okinawa.
Yep.
Wow. That's crazy. I'm starting to think Okinawa is made of typhoons because a lot of people have told me that.
Yeah, they pretty much are. They get hit like all summer and fall.
There was one typhoon in particular where we got hit three times by the same typhoon.
Yep.
And I was actually stuck at work for that whole thing while my family was up at the house watching water leak through the windows. So,
yeah.
Oh, yikes.
I think it was
140 miles an hour.
Oh, that sounds.
No, 110.
That's
how fast was it?
140. That's in the super typhoon range.
Let's see. I'm looking for the number. It's not 140. I'm searching it right now. But it was. It was definitely over 100 miles. Oh, it was more than 100 miles an hour. That's where it was. The barometric pressure went to 27.96, which apparently is really low.
Yeah. Mm.
But there's pictures of the ship and my father. And when I was researching this to make sure I knew facts around the typhoon, I found a site dedicated to LSTs. And I found pictures of my father on the LST that I didn't have.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty cool.
That is super neat.
Yeah.
Typhoons are super scary on the land. I cannot even imagine being on a ship.
Yeah, and they got run aground too. Many ships were lost in this. 14 ships, 53 major ships on the rocks.
Oh my God.
When my father counted them.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
It's an engineer's version of it. I got to warn you. So he's talking about exactly how they got the ship fixed and stuff. But yeah, that's my kind of story anyway.
That's crazy.
Very cool.
And you can find all your stuff at podfeet.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's PODFEET. The things on the end of your legs. Sometimes people spell it wrong.
Very cool.
And check that out. Hey, Kent, it is the last day of the month, man.
It is.
It is the last day of the month. Now, if you're watching this right now, it is your time to jump on the old Patreon bandwagon. Cruise on over to patreon.com/ritualmisery and just kick a buck in. Just kick a buck, man. Just kick a buck. And next week, we will be naming out all of our patrons, and we really appreciate that. That's so awesome. And thank you guys for everything on that. And Kent, what else are we doing next week?
Next week, we are honored to get Crunchy on the show. She has been on once before, I think, with a co-host. Yeah, we have not had a no kidding Crunchy exclusive on this show, but we will have that next week. I'm really looking forward to that episode.
Very cool. And Kent, where can people find you?
Twitter's the best place, at @RM_DelNoche. If you are a beer person like me and you want to read my boring 500 plus reviews of beers, you can go to ratebeer.com and look up username Del Noche. Where are you at, Amos?
Of course, I'm on Twitter. It's always Twitter. What are we going to do as podcasters when Twitter finally goes bankrupt? Because nobody wants to buy them.
I don't think that's going to happen. It better
not. I have noticed that no matter what people plug, the single thing everybody plugs is they'll say their Twitter handle. It's sort of the convergence in the middle of everything else, right?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's the thing
everybody uses and nobody pays for. I don't understand it at all.
I have to ask Kent, how do you feel about Ballast Point?
Ballast Point beer is, the couple of varieties that I've had is pretty good. I enjoy it.
Good answer. My son-in-law is the director of product operations.
Oh, cool. That's really cool. if I could get a hookup, that'd be,
yeah, there you go. I'm so excited. I finally know a guy. I mean, I've always wanted to be, awesome. Hey, don't you know a guy? I know a guy now.
Yes,
I get the best one.
Beer guy is a really good guy to know.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
You can follow me at the aforementioned bankrupt, soon to be bankrupt Twitter at Ethan Kane, and you can follow the show at Ritual Misery. Submit ideas on the subreddit ritualmisery.reddit.com. Email us podcast@ritualmisery.com, and of course, you can find all these and more ways to support the show at ritualmisery.com. Thank you so much to Kevin McLeod for allowing us to use your music, and thank you for listening and watching. For Kent, for me, for Allison, and for you, this has been your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya.
Bye.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Thank you so much for joining us, Allison. This was a blast.
That was really, really fun.